What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me is Naomi Katz on the phone. She's the author of Beautiful Being an Empowered Young Woman. She's going to offer us strategies to help young women cope with many contemporary issues. She explores the way adolescents see and talk about themselves. Naomi, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much.
You know, Naomi, girls, as you well know, have hundreds of questions about their bodies and boys and relationships and everything else. Yet often they're very reluctant to or embarrassed to seek advice from an appropriate resource. And I know in your book and your investigations, you have confronted the questions that girls are most often afraid to ask, and you provide strategies to successfully navigate their complicated world. 411 Teen applauds you on that and looks forward to talking with you. What was the impetus for you writing the book, Beautiful?
Well, I actually wrote the book in response to the request of a parent of one of my students. Mm-hmm. The young woman who's on the cover, her name is Kara. She was my student when she was in middle school, and in a school where I ran a girls' group. And her father, a number of years later, felt like his teenage daughters weren't listening to him. And he had a publishing house, and he thought that he could help his daughters and other parents like him by collaborating with me on a book to give this kind of information and these kind of perspectives to young women.
Well, I tell you, I read the book, and I do want to commend you on it. I like the way it was written and the way it flows, and it gives accurate information that is not real lofty. I think that the young folks that read it will have a real grasp for the accurate information that you convey. So, again, kudos to your book. I just really liked it a lot. I thought it said, and it said a lot, and it dealt with a lot of different perspectives. Do you feel like teens today are confronted with more issues concerning life than maybe 20 years ago? Are they just different? Is the world, we know the world is different. When you think about 20 years ago, how would you characterize the struggles that young women have today?
I think that young people, women and men, have always faced different kinds of challenges during the period that in which they're making the transition from being a child to being an adult, because mm-hmm. it's inherently challenging. I do think that the challenges have changed and are different, and part of the reason why the challenges are different is because our society is different. So in another time or in another community where there were mentoring relationships between young people and elders beyond just their parents, then there were many more outlets for support and for understanding what it meant to be a man or to be a woman in that particular society. Today, unfortunately, the community structure has really broken down, and young people don't have that many opportunities mm-hmm. for mentoring relationships with people who aren't either their parents or their teachers, both of whom are good mentors. But sometimes kids need more than that. And so I think that challenges have always existed. But I think the way that we as a culture have guided young people through the transition to adulthood has really changed. Mm. And that has intensified the challenge or the difficult aspect of maturing for today's youth. And another really important factor that didn't really even exist when I started this work is the prevalence of social media and the way that social media affects the way young people see themselves and represent themselves and communicate and develop relationships.
Well, where do girls, many girls, get their information concerning issues surrounding their bodies, issues surrounding sex and sexuality? Where are you finding that they get their information today?
From the internet, from the same place where we all, unfortunately, get most of our information. And sometimes that information can be accurate. You know, there are definitely good websites out there to give girls education about their bodies and understanding about what's happening as they go through these changes. But the other thing that is really easy for kids to access on the internet is pornography. And so that means that they're learning about sex in a very specific and often very unrealistic way.
How often are kids, young kids, adolescents tuning in to pornography? Do you have any stats on that? What's your...
I don't have any specific stats to give you on it, but I will tell you that it happens a lot more than we want to believe
that
it happens.
Mm-hmm. All right. What role, you know, we talk about how things have changed. Their milieu, their world has changed. It's different. They don't have that extended family. They don't have those surrogate mothers and fathers and sisters that they used to have years ago. And we've moved from that. What about the school? What role, from your perspective, should or does the school play today?
Well, it really depends. I mean, I can tell you what role I think the school should play.
Okay.
But I don't think that that's the role that the school can or even has the resources or ability to play.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, teachers are really, really important role models for young people. And unfortunately, teachers are probably the most overworked people in our society between the amount of students that they see every day, the amount of work that they need to do to prepare to see their students, the amount of work that they need to do to evaluate and give feedback to their students' work, and also the emotional side of holding the stories of, you know, 40, 50, 100 young people.
Mm-hmm.
So in an ideal setting, a school would be an amazing community in which a student learns and teaches and shares and feels supported and gives support, but schools are much more industrial than that today. And the capacity that teachers have to support their students and to contain the situations that their students are living in is limited by the fact that they just have, by the sheer number of students that they see every day.
Well, given that, what is your position on sex education? Do you think it ought to be taught in the schools? I know some folks are really opposed to that. Should there be a standard curriculum? How should we, in your opinion, address sex education?
I think we have no choice but to address sex education in our schools. If we had another structure where young people were receiving mentorship, then it could be provided in that kind of a structure. But today, we don't. Ideally, we could develop that. But in the situation we are living today, we have to teach young people about sex in school, because otherwise, where will they learn about it? From pornography, which they're doing anyway. And so we need to give them more than what they're finding out there. But to have a standard curriculum, I think that that's really dangerous. I think that, that that's dangerous for a lot of different aspects of education. I think that we need to respond to the needs of our individual students, the different populations of students in different schools, different ages, different needs of boys and girls, etc.
Okay. Do you feel like, given... in some ways, we're kind of caught here because we have mass media, which can provide more accurate information. But I keep hearing you talking about this pornography. And I'm just wondering, is it more of a problem than people recognize, than the general populace recognize? Are we finding that the majority of young folks, adolescents, are getting their information from the pornos?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it. When young people, sex is an ever-present aspect
right.
of culture.
Yeah.
And it's in kids and adults' faces all the time, through advertising, through various images that they see all the time.
Well, I guess excuse me for interrupting, but I'm thinking about hard porn, and I guess it would be, how do you define porn before I explore that? Because when you say porn to me, I tell you, I'm thinking about, you know, the XXX. Am I headed in the right direction? I just want to know. I mean, because I think folks don't realize that porn is that significant.
I agree with you. I think that people, especially parents, but people too, and adults in general, we don't realize the point that's significant in the lives of young people. But also it's really important to think about, well, of course it is. Because of course young people are curious about sex.
Of course.
And the internet gives them access to everything. When I was a teenager, you know, if you wanted to try and have access to porn in some way, it was at best a magazine, and it was not so easy to get your hands on, unless you happened to find one, you know, that belonged to someone in your family or in your house or something like that. But to purchase and to bring into your life, no. But through the internet, kids have very easy access and are naturally curious. And curiosity is a good
It's
a good thing for them to be seeking answers and seeking information about sex as well. Just from where?
I guess, you know.
Why are they seeking it on the internet instead of asking questions from the people around them?
Well, they don't ask questions because they don't feel comfortable in doing so. Do you think that given the access of more accurate information, are young folks, female and male, are they better informed about health and sex than they were 20 years ago? Are they still misinformed?
I think that there's probably a combination. I think that they have a better understanding of some things, but I think that there's also a lot of misinformation out there. And just because information is accessible doesn't mean that that information is accurate.
Right, right. No, I'm saying, are they getting accurate information in addition to that?
You know, I don't know. I'm not a researcher. I'm an educator. And so I can tell you anecdotal evidence from the young people with whom I work.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some kids who are getting accurate information and some kids who are getting really inaccurate information. And some kids who are getting both and then can't really tell the difference. And so I think that, you know, the responsibility, getting back to the question about sex ed in schools, the responsibility falls on us as adults to create the kind of environment where our children can ask us questions, or if they don't want to ask their parents, then they can ask another adult in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I would strongly agree with you. My next question would be, though, how does one get to that point where you have an environment that provides them with accurate information, that makes them feel welcome and comfortable in asking the information, that is going to be thorough with what they do? And I don't know that you or I or anyone could answer that, but hopefully I want to pick your brain on it. You're tuned into 411 Teen, and I'm talking with Naomi Katz, author of Beautiful, Being an Empowered Young Woman. The conversation will continue following a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me via phone is Naomi Katz. Naomi explores the way that adolescents see and talk about themselves. She's the author of a new book out called Beautiful, Being an Empowered Young Woman. Naomi, how do you define beautiful?
I think that more than it's an adjective or a way to describe something else, beautiful is actually a feeling that we carry inside ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I feel when I'm proud of something that I've done, or when I'm satisfied and happy with how I look, or when I've accomplished something that I've been working on, or when I see something that makes me feel that feeling, a beautiful sunset, a beautiful view.
Okay. When we talk about beautiful, how is it influenced by our milieu, by our culture, our world? Do you find that getting to that point of feeling, as you just described, is influenced by our culture, by, you know, where we live even? What's our zip code today?
Of course, our definition. I mean, we can look at the way our definition of beauty has changed over centuries, or the way definitions of beauty are different in different cultures, in different countries, in different societies. So, of course, our definition is influenced by the place where we come from. But that being said, I think that we also all, each of us, need to maintain our own personal definition of beauty to be able to stay true to what actually is beautiful to us.
And I feel you totally and agree. I guess my question to you is, how do we get young folks there when they live in a world with social media, Wall Street, you know, Fifth Avenue, whatever defines, how do we get them to a point where they feel comfortable within self? Because that's one of the big issues with adolescents, particularly girls, but boys really have that issue too. They may not display it the same way.
I think that we have to keep in mind that the way that young people get there is the same way for us to be able to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, young people just need a little bit more attention around it because of the transition that they're facing in that point in their lives when it really throws everything into question. But in truth, taking time for ourselves to appreciate each of us who we are and to understand what's important to each of us on our own allows us to come together in a social setting in a much more meaningful and productive way. And so, you know, young people live in a world that's full of many influences and a lot of distractions, but they live in that world because we've created it for them. And when we preserve time in our families and in our individual
mm-hmm.
relationships
okay.
with the young people around us in our communities, when we preserve time to invest in those relationships, to cultivate something in those relationships, then we're offering our young people an alternative that they may not have otherwise had so much access to. But it's really at the fundamental base of it about slowing down and taking time to cultivate that relationship, each of us with ourselves and then with the people around us.
Okay.
And then it's a practice.
Yeah.
So once we've taken the time to do that, it's a practice. It's not something that comes overnight.
And again, philosophically, I totally agree with you. Can you give me some suggestions for the listening audience as to how we get there? For example, I heard you say family, spending more time together, maybe eating together. That is one suggestion. Do you have other suggestions that parents, in turn, may do to cultivate this this atmosphere, this attitude?
I think it just needs to really be a priority.
Mm-hmm.
For each
okay.
of us, for all the young people around us, whether we're parents or not, we have to keep in mind that raising the next generation is the responsibility that all of us share. Of course, a certain measure of that responsibility falls upon the parents, but one of the fundamental breakdowns of community in our society is when the rest of us forget that it's not only that mom's responsibility to raise her kids. We have to help her, and we have to help those kids. Because that's part of what being in a shared society, community, culture is all about. And so if we prioritize developing relationships of mentorship with young people in our own families and around us, then the conversations will naturally happen. But we have to devote time and energy to them and be open to keeping those channels of communication in existence and to keep the communication flowing. Another piece of it is also to remember that we as adults, the more we are honest with the young people around us and share of our own vulnerabilities, the more they'll do the same. And again, keep that communication open. So, you know, I have a lot of moms who ask me, well, how can I talk to my daughter about body image
mm-hmm.
when I'm not feeling
exactly.
so great about my body myself?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question.
Yeah,
and
it is.
The answer is to just be, one answer is to just be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to feel perfectly amazing about my body every day in order to share that perspective with the young women around me. I can say, you know, I too suffer from feeling sometimes overweight or that my hair doesn't look good or whatever the case may be, but to teach the girls that I work with that doesn't have to take over my day. I can feel that way,
right.
but I can also feel good about these other things, and I can also feel like
mm-hmm.
anyway I'm going to move forward and take care of what I need to take care of today. And all of those lessons are really valuable. And bringing that bit of vulnerability to the young people around us will open the door for them to do the same. And then that gives them the opportunity to receive support that's really meaningful.
So it's a matter of getting yourself and them there to that point where they are feeling, again, comfortable and successful and at peace with self, is what I hear you saying. as we look at the major issues, or look at issues or challenges that adolescents are confronted with, what would you identify as those major ones that young women confront today?
I think that the issues that young women are confronting today are the same issues that young women have been confronting for generations, which mm-hmm. are questions about what does it mean to be a young woman in the culture in which I live? What does it mean to be equal to the men around me? What does it mean to express myself in a way that's authentic and true to who I am as a woman, but also allows me to work in collaboration with the young men around me? How do I feel comfortable in my changing body? How do I feel comfortable in the relationships that I have with my friends, with my elders, with my teachers, with my parents, with my work, with my romantic partners? How do I express my sexuality? What does it mean to me to be sexual? Am I even ready to be sexual? These issues are universal. And girls confront them across cultures, across languages, across countries. The things that are changing today are the way that girls are confronting those issues.
And what do you see how are they confronting them?
Well, basically, the prevalence, as I talked about, of pornography on the internet is a very, very important aspect, but also the way that young people interact through social media. So much of their social lives mm-hmm. happen inside these social media platforms that they often almost forget the impact or the power of face-to-face communication. Number one. Number two, when I was in high school, no matter how complicated the social dynamics might have been, at the end of the day, I could go home and rest and not be in that social environment, particularly if it was challenging to me that day.
Mm-hmm.
Today, because of the relationship that young people have with their phones, and all
right.
of us have with our phones, there is no such break. The social dynamics just simply continue and often intensify over social media. And so really the only break kids have is when they're asleep. That's really dangerous because it creates a situation that's exceptionally stressful. Additionally, when I'm looking at somebody's profile on social media, I'm comparing my whole self, including mm-hmm. the inside, my aspects of myself, with somebody else's external self. And that's a really unrealistic comparison. It's the same as comparing my normal body with the body of a model.
Exactly, exactly. And how do we... get away from these unrealistic images? You know, body image is so important today, especially during this whole period of vulnerability. These young folks are very vulnerable. They're very insecure. And so how do we get them away from it? They're bombarded with it. It's everywhere. What suggestions do you have? I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's on the television, it's on your phone, you walk into a store and it's in an ad. What do you do? How do you get them away from this?
I think the response involves a few things, some of which we've already established are really important. So, for example, if I share with one of my students my own vulnerability, I see this image and it mm-hmm. makes me feel uglier, it makes me feel not sexier, it makes me feel, already automatically she can relate to me. Yes. And so these images affect all of us, and let's be real about that with each other, with our young people, with the way that we interact. That's first of all. Second of all, if we help young people cultivate a strong sense of self and a sense of confidence that carries them through this time of transition in adolescence and just in general in their lives, then the images have far less power, because we're not going to change the images. There are people out there who are doing incredible work to bring awareness around media and to change portrayals of women in the media, and I'm deeply grateful for the work that those people are doing. At the same time, I think that the best tool that we can give our young people, especially our girls, is the capacity to not give those images so much power. The capacity to say, okay, this is me, this is who I am, this is what I see on the internet, this is how it makes me feel, this is what I'm about. And I know what I'm about even when I see these images on the internet.
Yeah, and that's, all of this is occurring, during a time of identity search. They're trying to find themselves and they're trying to fit in, and it's you know, very important to be with the right group. So it comes at a time when, again, they're the most vulnerable and they don't know who they are. They're insecure. How do you feel about groups? And when I say groups, are cliques, do you support them? Do you think they're good, bad? How do you feel about them?
Social groups in school and in different social environments, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that naturally anyone, adults, kids, whoever, are going to associate into groups of people with whom they feel comfortable. And
indeed.
So social groups, cliques, whatever you want to call them, are going to exist. When you have, you know, for example, in a school, when you have 100, 200, 500 kids in a grade, those kids are going to divide up into groups.
Oh, of course.
And
yeah.
That's really natural and healthy because people are different and people will feel comfortable in different social situations, in different dynamics. And so I think it's great for there to be groups in any particular environment. I think it's really dangerous for those groups to become exclusive or exclusionary or to have a membership. Those things can be really poisonous in a social environment.
Yeah, because we get into that whole mean girl phenomena, and that seems to be on the increase today. Are you seeing that?
If phenomenon is on the increase, I'm not sure. I think it always existed. I remember that dynamic from my own high school years, both perpetrating it and also, you know, being affected by it. I think that naturally among any relationship, there's some element of competition, and it just is a question about how we manage that element of competition. Is it something healthy that allows us to push ourselves and do better at whatever it is that we do, or is it something that's destructive? And so I think that part of the issue, maybe why it feels like the mean girl phenomenon or competitiveness is more prevalent or stronger now than it has been in the past, is because we are not really devoting that much time and energy in our society to cultivating experiences for girls only with other girls or for boys only with other boys. And so some of the behaviors can come out in those settings. But actually, creating those kinds of experiences for our young people is really important and provides them with a space that allows them to cultivate certain aspects of themselves that they can't cultivate in a mixed setting. And I think that if we created those opportunities more, then some of those competitive behaviors would be less prevalent in those settings.
And one of the parents had asked me to ask you exactly how you felt about same-sex classes in same-sex schools. Were you in support of them, especially during this vulnerable period, and did you find that it enhanced the self-concept, be it male or female?
I think absolutely yes. I mean, that's really a big part of the foundation of the work that I do, which is often working with groups of only girls. Because I think that, you know, as we've moved towards a society that focuses much more on equality between men and women, that means that some of the things that we used to cultivate in settings that were only women's settings, and I imagine also only men's settings, I don't know from firsthand experience because I'm not a man, but those things that we would cultivate in those settings we're not doing anymore. And so some of the honor that existed in women's work, for example, it's not really honored anymore. And that's unfortunate. And the more we can create settings for girls to be with other girls, the more we can cultivate their own sense of themselves as emerging young women.
How would you define today's women's culture?
I think, unfortunately, we don't have that much of a women's culture today. I mean, I think that, you know, for example, much of the movement for the rights of women today focuses on the rights of working moms, which is really important because many moms are working. Most women can't afford not to work. And so they need certain benefits in order to support their lives as working moms, especially single working moms. But it can't be that being a working mom is all that being a woman is about. And I'm not sure how the women's movement has come so much to focus on that when really I think that we would really benefit from continuing to cultivate what remains and growing more of a women's culture. So that means, again, what I said, a culture where women are spending time with other women with that being the intention. and cultivating those kind of relationships. Also, you know, in other more traditional societies, women were and still are the keepers of sacred arts that beautify our lives and would with great pride create various elements for their homes and for their families. And the home was a place that really honored the work of the woman. And now it's almost like a degrading thing for women
Indeed.
To
it
be
is.
At home and mm-hmm. do the work of the home.
Mm-hmm. It is. When you think about this lack of a women's culture, are there suggestions that you might make to women to help them feel good about themselves? Any practices that they might engage in?
With specific regard to women's culture?
Yeah. Well, with specific regard to the women's culture and them feeling good about self and developing a positive self-image and self-concept. Are there any just little things, looking in the mirror every day and saying, I'm special, that you might suggest? And I can ask you, you can think about that because we're almost at a point that we need to take a break. So think about where you would be, what you would say to mothers who are concerned about. I'm giving you questions that some parents have asked me to ask, and that's one that I wanted to pursue with you. Another question you might think about for a second during the break is the relationship with mother and daughter. Should it be parental or a friend? Hold your thoughts. We're going to take a brief break. This is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. This hour, I'm talking with Naomi Katz, author of Beautiful, Being an Empowered Young Woman. Naomi is an educator who empowers women and girls to redefine culture. She's a visionary behind the Beautiful Project movement, dedicated to building self-confidence in women and girls. Naomi, before we went on break, I was asking you if you had any specific behaviors or activities that you would recommend for women to just even feel good, self-help type things, to feel good about themselves within their culture, within who they are, what they're about.
Of course, there are some really simple things that we can do. You know, one is really to be proud of who we are each day and start the day out that way. No matter what it takes for you to start the day out in a sense of strength for yourself, find it, whether it means looking in the mirror and smiling, whether it means working out, whether it means eating a very specific, very healthy breakfast, whatever it is for you, start your day with that feeling, or strive to start your day with that feeling. And then take that feeling into the rest of your life. Be a model of self-esteem for others. We live in a society where too often it's not cool to accept compliments, and we deflect them by, oh, this old shirt, no, it's not that nice.
Right.
No.
That's
true. Accept the compliments that come your way, and compliment other people. If you see beauty in somebody around you, tell her, because she will carry that with her wherever she goes. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, pay attention to the language we use to talk about ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to use language that is critical and that is judgmental and that doesn't support positive growth for myself or for the people around me, and that's just dangerous.
Yeah. What about the mother and daughter relationships? How do they establish and maintain healthy relationship? And do you think it should be, sometimes we see these mothers who say, well, I just want to be her friend. Being her friend is more important. So the mother and the daughter, you can almost tell the difference, particularly when you look at their style. How do you feel about that? How should mothers and daughters maintain their relationship?
Parent. 100% parent.
Great.
our parents can have open, loving relationships with us that mm-hmm. have an element of friendship to them, absolutely. But a parent is a parent, and that means sometimes setting boundaries for our kids, and that means sometimes saying no, and that means creating limits. And that modeling of limits is really important for our young people to learn to set limits for themselves. And we want them to have that skill in complicated social dynamics where they need to step away or say no, in sexual encounters where they want to assert themselves and set a boundary. And they learn that capacity of setting limits from us, from their parents, from their guardians, from their guides, from mm-hmm. their mentors. And so my friends sometimes set limits for me because, you know, of their schedule or because of their needs, but not in the same way that my parents did. And mm-hmm. that's a really clear one to me. I, you know, my relationship with my mom was a relationship of friendship in that we trusted each other. My mom mm-hmm. passed away a few years ago, but we have a great trust between one another and that we have great love for one another and really strong mutual respect. But she was an authority figure in my mm-hmm. life, and that was important. I didn't always like it, but it was important. And I appreciate her today for finding that balance between being tough and clear and being loving.
Well, I certainly applaud you on hearing you say that because I totally agree with you with that perspective because so often we find that particularly mothers want to be their daughter's friend, and I don't know if it's being a friend or just not wanting to age themselves. So there's a little bit of both. We have been talking about your book. Where can one get it?
The best place is on my website, beautifulproject.net.
Okay.
You can download the first chapter of the book and check it out and see what you think, and then you can order it via that website through Amazon.
Okay. Naomi, in these last, we don't have that many much time left, but what are your thoughts about bullying, this bullying behavior? Are there any insights that you might share concerning this behavior?
The pattern of bullying, often when a person is perpetrating that kind of behavior, mm-hmm. often comes from a place of insecurity, the same place from which another child might really just stay quiet or might not participate in class or might not assert herself in relationships. And in both cases, we need to, again, cultivate a strong sense of self for our young people. Teach them that their opinions matter, that their voice is valued, that we care about what they have to say and we care about who they are, that they're important. Too often, young people don't get that message from the adults around them. And that's unfair and really also inaccurate because our young people are really important to all of us. They're our future. And as cliched as it might sound, it's true. And the investment that we place in educating our young people is an investment in our culture, in our society, in the mm-hmm. life that we want to have. And so, you know, kids who are bullying other kids are doing so because they themselves feel unappreciated or insecure or unsure of themselves or any combination of those. And so those young people need to feel love and to feel support and to feel valued in the same way as everybody else.
How can parents cultivate a culture of empowerment for their children?
Well, I think it's connected to the question that we discussed about the mother-daughter relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my perspective, a parent is a leader in a child's life, an educator, a mentor, an authority figure who gives them all the love that they need and does so in a way that includes also setting limits and creating boundaries. And so a culture of empowerment for young people comes from feeling loved and supported at home. The way we feel at home translates directly into the way we feel about ourselves and the way we treat other people. So creating an environment of love and support in our homes and in our schools and in our communities is really, really important for young people. But again, mm-hmm. that also means setting limits. That also means creating a structure in which kids can thrive and can understand also the boundaries that exist around them, always focusing on using language that empowers them. And so even when we want to give some kind of feedback to our young people, to do so constructively. You know, mm-hmm. I saw that you were really struggling in the last quarter of that soccer game. I think maybe it might be useful to you to start to eat a little bit more healthily and to work out a little bit more, not, oh, wow, kid, you're totally out of shape.
Right.
You know, and that, the language, the power of that language is immeasurable. And that's true in the way that we talk to young people, the way we talk about ourselves, the way we talk to our friends. Use language that's encouraging, supportive, and empowering.
Well, Naomi, I know you have worked with teens on other continents and wanted to ask you to share some of your experiences on the other continents. What kind of, can you identify similarities or differences that you may have observed?
Well, for better or worse, I think that the issues that young women in particular are facing today are universal. I think that all young women, no matter what culture they come from, are facing questions about what it means to be a woman, how is that different from being a man, what does it mean to be equal, how do I relate to my body, what does it mean to take care of my body, how am I going to express myself in a sexual encounter. All of those questions are really universal. The way that the questions play out are sometimes different depending on the culture of work in a particular society. You know, here in the U.S., we work a lot and we don't have that much time to devote to other things, and that has a significant impact on our relationships. The other things that make a difference are the relationships between men and women in different cultures. So in some more traditional cultures, particularly in some places where I work in the Middle East, there's much more clear roles for men and for women, which many people could see as limiting, but for many other people it cultivates some of what we were talking about before around a women's culture and a space that's safe for women to be with other women and share life experiences in a way that's actually supportive.
But when we talk about culture, can you share how you have seen culture influence one's self-concept? Because you've been in so many, and I'm thinking about even here in the States, you know, we have the culture of, we might have the Hispanic culture, we have the African-American culture. These cultures identify beauty, and I'm not just talking about physical beauty, identify the role of the female in different ways. Do you have suggestions as to how young women learn to navigate in what may be their own specific culture and the overall majority culture? Because I see often a conflict there.
What kind of conflict?
A conflict is as far as identifying who they are and what their role should be, how they perceive themselves. Because their culture may dictate one thing, and the overall dominant culture may not. I'm just wondering, you know, given that you've been to, you know, other continents, if you've just had some insights, some suggestions as to how a young woman learns how to navigate living in her own culture, whatever it may be, and the overall dominant culture.
I think that young women, like everybody else, learn from the culture in which they live. So if they live in a culture, for example, where it's really important for women to be equal to men, and that equality, as it's often translated in our society, to be sameness, then they live in a culture where they learn that being equal to men means doing the same things as them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some aspects of that are wonderful. Many, many doors have opened for me and for the generation coming after me than were open for my grandmother or my great-grandmother. And there are aspects of that are incredible. And so girls learn from what they see, like any of us. But at the same time, one of the things that we can also help them is to understand the way that our culture has evolved in order for these, you know, that has opened these doors of opportunity and what has been lost on the way so that they can choose the way that they want to express themselves in the context of their culture. Culture has a huge impact on the way that we develop as individuals, even from the most basic level of choosing to eat with a knife and a fork, because that's what we learn.
Right.
You know, or sitting on a chair instead of sitting on the floor when we eat. And so we learn to live in the culture. We learn to adapt to the culture in which we live. And that affects the way that we carry ourselves. At the same time, it's, I think, really useful for young people to have exposure to other cultures to see what they can learn mm-hmm. and what might be different in another culture that might be something that they want to try and bring into their own or something that they want to adapt or adopt into their own lives. And that's the beauty of the interconnected world in which we live, that those opportunities are possible. But really, you know, the definition of culture is a learned pattern of behavior. Mm-hmm. And so we learn the patterns of behavior that we carry from the culture in which we live.
Well, you've traveled several continents. How have your experiences working around the world, how have they informed your worldview as a woman?
Well, I've seen in many different places, in Europe, in North America, in the Middle East, in South America, that women's leadership is a positive thing for all of us, for men, for women, for children, for elders. Because women carry a sense of empathy that honors and respects all individuals. Women, as the givers of life, respect life and want to preserve life and want to cultivate life. Women have a certain sense of emotional intelligence that allows us to navigate complicated relationships and create the kinds of networks of support that we each need. And so, really, I think that we need to cultivate women's leadership as much as possible. I'm really excited about the candidacy of Hillary Clinton, and I encourage her to bring out more of her sides as a woman and as a mother in order to bring the kind of empathetic leadership that this world needs.
What's next? What for the Beautiful Project? We haven't talked a lot. I don't know if people have a real grasp for what it is. In this last minute or two, can you talk about the Beautiful Project, what it is and where it's going?
Sure. The Beautiful Project is my project, is my work, is a collaboration between myself and a number of colleagues across the globe who are doing work to cultivate self-confidence and a strong sense of self for women and girls. And so in some places, that's the facilitation of long-term groups for teenage girls or for young adult women. In some places, that means various kinds of workshops in schools and in other kinds of educational settings, other organizational settings for young people or for school leadership or for other facilitators who will work with young women. In some places, that involves working particularly with mothers who are trying to support their daughters. Also, working on a series of retreats, particularly focused on sexuality now, for teenage girls to be able to really discuss and ask questions. And what's next? Continuing the work that's been going on, particularly opening up in the coming year a really strong focus on working with young adult women, women in their 20s, who finish, you know, the years of being in a framework, of being in school, and all of a sudden go out into the working world and need support, like all of us. And so trying to cultivate a culture of support for young women, mm-hmm. Continuing to work on this theme of working around sexuality, particularly for teenagers, and eventually another book. It's in process.
Oh, wow. We'll be looking forward to it. Are there particular practices that you feel teachers can incorporate to make their students feel more empowered about their gender and their sexual identities?
Of course. Teachers cannot overestimate their role as influencers, as role models in the lives of young people, and to carry that role with pride. Most educators are aware of it, and that's why they choose to work in education, mm-hmm. because they know that they have a gift to bring to young people. But it's just important to emphasize it so that we don't forget, especially now in the summer when teachers are resting and maybe rejuvenating for the next year. But I think, you know, it's really important for us to be real about the opinions that we carry and the way that we bring those opinions into our educational settings, classrooms or otherwise. And so I encourage teachers to just notice, who do you call on more frequently? Mm-hmm. And to try and keep a tally. Am I calling on boys? Am I calling on girls? Am I mixing it up? Am I creating space? You know, because often boys will be the first ones to jump at the chance to answer a question. And then girls sometimes need more time. And so do I leave time in my instructional time? Do I leave a moment of silence for kids to think through their answer and then maybe raise their hand? Or am I constantly moving forward in the work that I'm doing? As educators, are we talking about these issues among ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
I think that every school, every educational setting needs to devote some time amongst the educators to discuss these issues, to bring opinions to the forefront, to offer suggestions to one another. That's really valuable.
Naomi, I really want to say thank you. We have run out of time, and I could continue to talk with you, but I appreciate you sharing your insights. My listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.